Well, hello everyone and welcome back to Crosswires. It's James here and we have a really liberating episode for you this week. I made that pun. Joining me, as always, is my beautiful fiance and my co-host, Jay. How are you doing?
Doing well. I'm trying to download my show intro, but Microsoft won't let me log into a Microsoft Word, so I'm having trouble.
You joke, but we're actually having that issue with your dad's iPad at the moment.
Yes.
Literally can't get Jay's dad logged into Microsoft Word on the iPad. I spent most, like, a good chunk of yesterday figuring out how to reset his password. I will tell that story later on. Let me put it this way. Azure Active Directory Sync is a pain in the bottom. And he doesn't use a Windows computer at the office anymore. So you know what I've done? I've just deleted him from, figured a clever way to decouple the sync, and he's now purely Office 365. It's very scary, because when you do that, it deletes the account on the 365 side, and you have to recover the account.
Yeah, it would be so much more simpler if we were using LibreOffice there.
Well, that is true. And that leads me to introduce our guest. Would you please welcome Mike Saunders from the Document Foundation? How are you doing, Mike?
Hello, everybody. Nice to be here. Yeah, just hearing Jay talking about logging into Microsoft Office. That combination of words. Like, why would you need to log into your Office suite? I'm sure we're going to talk about this a lot in the podcast today. But just that idea that you need to log into a piece of software to access your own data. But anyway, nice to be here. Yeah, from the Document Foundation, but also from a million Linux magazines over the years, Linux Voice, Linux Format, Tux Radar podcast. Some people will recognize me. But really great to be here with you both to chat about lots of things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it goes into the fact of, like, all this authentication and login stuff. It stops people from being able to do what they want to do. So, like, my dad is creative and does writing. And right now he cannot log in to write any of this, any of his creative writing because he's blocked by his own program. I had a trouble of the time because a lot of colleges require Microsoft Word formatting and all that. So, like, I had trouble getting my Microsoft Office to my school to be authenticated. So, and I had a paper due, and I'm like trying to get this paper done, and I can't log. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and when you pay for something, I mean, I know you can get the online versions of Microsoft Office 365 for free, but, well, then you are the product. But this idea of logging in, and it becomes normalized for a lot of people. And I know we're jumping straight into a topic here, but it becomes normalized. You don't go to a restaurant or a pub and they say, right, stand at the door and log in before coming in. You say, no, give me a table. Let me. It's kind of scary how that's been normalized. But yeah, that's maybe a topic for later.
Oh, no, it's a good starting point. Jay's very passionate. I'm actually surprised that Jay's fully passionate. Like, I'm fed up. It's good.
I remember the early days. I won't name which company, but there was a company that would pass around a copy of Microsoft Office before they had to authenticate. So you had all these copies of Microsoft Office. Again, I won't say which company, so I don't get them in trouble, but it was one of those, you just don't tell anybody.
Jay, I think every small business around the world in the late 90s, early 2000s, had that CDR with Microsoft Office XP with the license key written on the disk.
Yep. and you just don't tell anybody what you're doing.
Exactly. But before we get into too much into this, because we want to kind of introduce some concepts and things. But Mike, you obviously mentioned I can't speak today. You've been involved in the Linux world for quite a long time. And just before the show, we were actually talking about how we can all be Linux fans, but actually all three of us are actually, I think Mike maybe secretly, oh, wait, I've blown my secret. You're a Mac user like us, but with a good reason. Mike, do you want to tell people a little bit about kind of, I guess, yourself and your FOSS, oh, I love that term, FOSS journey
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Mac user on this particular machine, but I do have Linux machines as well and a Raspberry Pi and stuff. But yeah, I think it's a good thing to talk about because a lot of people are like that. I think a lot of people go through a journey. I've been using free and open source software since 1998 when I got Red Hat Linux 5.1 on a computer magazine CD in the UK. Now I now live in Munich, but back then, yeah, I got it. I didn't have the internet at home, and I got a CD from a computer magazine, Red Hat Linux. What is that? I had no idea. Before that, I was using an Amiga, and before that, a ZX Spectrum. So I do have a bit of a history as well. I was listening to a podcast from you both a while ago where Jay was saying she was sad to see her first mobile phone in a museum. Yes. Her first iPhone in a museum. I had the iPhone 3G as well, and it's like I see the same thing with my old video games consoles when they get put in video games museums. But I went through a period of everything free and open source software, and that's really, really important. I had ThinkPads. I was recompiling my kernel just to turn sound on, and these are things that are so much better now. We do complain about certain things with Linux compatibility, hardware compatibility, which is often not Linux's fault, of course. But I had to recompile my kernel to get sound in my first Linux distribution, and those things have improved a lot. And I've run Linux on many, many machines over the years, and written hundreds of pages for Linux magazines, done loads of podcasts, and I've loved it. But yeah, I do have I'm recording right now on a Mac. My main machine to play around on is a Linux box, but this is Unix. If I could show everybody my dock, it is LibreOffice, of course, Thunderbird, Signal for messaging, GIMP, VLC. Everything is free and open source software apps. But yeah, Apple, there are a lot of problems and a lot of things to complain about with Apple and the walled garden and stuff, totally. But yeah, you end up with a machine that has a Unix operating system, very tightly integrated with the hardware. And then I just want to run free and open source software apps on top of it. So that's my current setup, but I do have plenty of Linux toys to play around with.
And even Apple is doing things like this year, they've made Swift open source. So, and actually it is now through a foundation. They've actually moved all the GitHub pages to a foundation that is not Apple owned. Apple's one of the biggest contributors to the Swift development language, but they make it where anybody can use Swift. Apple has been working with Valve on Proton for getting games to show on Unix architecture. So it's been helping helping Macs play better, but also things like Steam Decks and things like that. So there's a lot of things that even Apple, who's very closed sourced, they're contributing a lot to open source technology.
Wasn't Apple one of the biggest contributors to Cups? And of course, who can forget Apple's contribution to WebKit?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Apple over the years and the decades, I guess, when we're talking, had the company has done a lot, has contributed a lot to open source, but there were still some things where for instance, the Free Software Foundation Europe is in a battle in the EU against Apple because Apple has its on, especially on iOS, has its totally walled garden. Yeah, you can't install apps from a third party easily or at all on an iPhone or an iPad. And there is something called the Digital Markets Act in the EU that says no, you can't be complete gatekeepers for a platform. So even if you monopolize the platform, you need to give people a way to install other applications, like side loading. Yeah. Yep. And Apple's fighting against this. And, so that's a situation that's not so good. So I think it's a really mixed bag. Yeah. Apple's definitely better than a lot of companies in terms of contributing to open source. I think, Clang and, the alternative compilers, they've done a lot there. But sometimes from a business practice, there's still some things that free software advocates are a bit annoyed about. But anyway, here I am. Yeah.
No, understandably so. But, and Mike, it's generally great because I obviously reached out via Mastodon, because Mastodon's awesome, and said, look, you know, we'd love to get someone on to come and talk about it. Because obviously with a lot of stuff that's going on at the moment in terms of, well, let's be honest, Microsoft. But I think one of the things that I really want to talk about is how there are alternatives to proprietary software. And I almost, there's one thing I do want to say. There are going to be times where proprietary software might be a better fit for you personally. Now, for example, and almost as a scale, right? So if I take, for example, everyone's least favorite proprietary photo and design suites, Adobe, right? Closed source, predatory subscription pricing, massive lock-in. But then you've got the Affinity Suite, which is now admittedly owned by Canva, but it's a one-time purchase. And they're on Mac and Windows. It would put the icing on the cake if they did a Linux version. But sometimes, I think, because I tried to use as much as possible, I'm very similar to yourself, Mike, obviously, using Signal. I do use Vivaldi as my primary browser. Yeah. But, you know, things like Orca Slicer for my 3D printer, I'm using that. You know, so much stuff that I use it, and stuff you don't even think about that is open source. And it's kind of cool. But what I wanted to start with is talk a little bit about LibreOffice, because that is, it's kind of one of the biggest things that obviously the Document Foundation do. But Mike, what is LibreOffice? I mean, we put some links in, we'll put links into the show notes, but it's got a fascinating history.
It really has, yeah. But just quickly on that point before, and then sure. I can talk a lot about LibreOffice. But there are some people who will only use free and open source software out of principle, and that I respect that, I understand it. Years ago, I met Richard Stallman, and he had this tiny, tiny netbook laptop with him. I'm talking like 15 years ago or so. But it was the only thing he could find where everything, including the BIOS, had no binary blobs, and everything was free and open source. But Richard Stallman was a bit of a bigger guy, and to see him using this tiny, tiny laptop, I know he already suffered from finger problems anyway. So this was years ago anyway, but very pure about his idea of using only free software. But I think in the real world, you end up taking some other things into consideration. And we have this as well in LibreOffice. So before I talk a bit about the history of the software, we have the LibreOffice social media accounts on various platforms, including X or Twitter, which is very controversial and understandably. Yes. And a lot of people would like us to get away from that platform, understandably. But do you go where the users are? If all of the other Office suites are on X, do we want to be the first out of principle to leave X? You could argue so, but are we then going to miss a massive audience? So these are all the questions that go around, that balance of, do you use a bit of proprietary software here if it really makes sense sometimes, or do you be completely pure like some people, which I understand? So it's difficult to find the balance, and we'll talk about that a bit later. But yeah, LibreOffice, pretty much every Linux user knows about LibreOffice. It is the successor project to OpenOffice, OpenOffice.org, which was the successor project to StarOffice, which was a proprietary office suite in the 1990s. It is the second most commonly used office suite available now. And the name OpenOffice is still really, really big. We see people recommending OpenOffice all the time, but OpenOffice and LibreOffice, there was a big fork, a big split about 15 years ago. OpenOffice was in Sun Microsystems, and then Sun Microsystems was bought by Oracle, and there was a big hoo-ha about what will happen. And then a bunch of people in the community, OpenOffice community, said, let's move this software to a free, independent, non-profit foundation, the Document Foundation. Let's get it out of the hands of any one particular company, because under Sun, OpenOffice did pretty well in those 10 or so years. Lots of people using it. It was in every Linux distribution. It was free and open source software. It had a community. But do you want everything to be under the umbrella of, or potentially under the control of one big company? So in about 2010, the Open Office community back then said, right, let's move this out. Let's move the community. Let's move everything into an independent, non-profit foundation. And they chose Germany to base this foundation, the Document Foundation, for a bunch of reasons, some of them historical. Open Office and Star Office started in Hamburg in Germany as well. Germany is a good place to start a foundation where you've got all these rules established, sometimes too many rules, German bureaucracy, but you can put all of these things in place to say, right, we have this. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. Nobody can buy us. Nobody can try and take us over. We'll have distribution of powers in the different bodies of the foundation. So let's make an independent foundation and then to look after the future of Open Office, which they called LibreOffice. And that's kind of how we got into the situation we're in. Since then, pretty much every Linux distribution switched over to LibreOffice. Open Office moved over to the Apache Foundation, but its last major release was in 2014. No big update of Open Office since 2014. And since 2023, all other updates have stopped. It now has unfixed security holes. It is pretty much completely abandoned. Nothing is happening. The only source code changes are people tweaking code comments and stuff, pretty much. A couple of other things. But yeah, OpenOffice is pretty much dead, and everything has moved to LibreOffice. And now we estimate there are around 200 million LibreOffice users in the world. We don't track anybody, so we can't say exactly, but we estimate that. Of course, the vast majority are on Windows. So that goes back to what we were saying. You know, Windows, it sucks and proprietary, and it's just a pretty awful system to work with. But it's where the vast majority of our users are. We could say out of principle, let's not make any Windows builds to move people to free software like Linux. But do you win anything at the end of the day with that? I don't know.
I don't think you do, because it's very different to ask someone to change their Office suite than it is to say you need to change everything that you do. I'll give you a really good example. My dad is he's Windows user through and through, has been his whole professional career. That's not necessarily tech savvy, but he was very much an Office, you know, user. But obviously when he got his most recent laptop, which I helped him pick out, do you know, honestly, the only bad experience I've had with backmarket.com, every other time I bought a ThinkPad, because for friends and family, while I don't necessarily like some of the stuff they're doing, they're bowing down to the whole Copilot stuff, the non-Copiloting machines are brilliant. Somewhere, I think Jay still got my ThinkPad 270 somewhere, T270. I think you still got somewhere, and I think that's running Pop OS. He said, oh, well, you know, I need Microsoft. I said, no, you don't. I'm going to put LibreOffice on. You'll be able to do everything. And even if you need to share files, and we're going to come to this, you can still do it. So we've kind of mentioned, Mike, a few things already. Obviously, why do we need an alternative? What's wrong with Microsoft Office? Well, you know, surely everyone can afford a copy of Microsoft Office or pirate one. Well, I didn't say that. But why an alternative? What's wrong with Microsoft Office?
Yeah, it is a good question, because this is what a lot of people ask. A lot of people, we in the geek scene and tech scene, we see things differently. We talk about things like tech monopolies, the behavior of Microsoft over decades and stuff. But for the average user, it's like, well, I click this button and I can type a letter. And if I try and tell an 80-year-old lady here in Munich, who just types letters that you need an alternative Office suite, she would say, just leave me alone. So the arguments for this have actually changed quite a bit over the years. If you go back 10 years ago, it was more about price. Not for me, but for most people. Yeah, we know free software is about way more than, as they say, it's not about free beer, it's free as in freedom. But if you go back 10 years or 20 years ago, everything was about, most things were about price. The biggest benefit for most people was you don't have to go to the shop and buy for 200 pounds or euros an office suite. You just get this office suite for free. And that was really the biggest benefit. Now things are changing a lot. The most recommendations that we see for LibreOffice on social media, especially from tech influencers, is because LibreOffice is private, because LibreOffice is offline, because LibreOffice doesn't require the cloud or a subscription, or as Jay said earlier, logging into your word processor. Like that, those words just trigger something in me, the idea you have to log in. So these are the reasons now why people are recommending LibreOffice. Nothing to do with the price. It's really, really interesting because you can get Microsoft Office more or less for free. They hook you in, and then, of course, you're locked in. So something may look free. People in free software always give the example of drug dealers. Yeah, your first hit is free. So if you're in a place with lots of drugs and stuff, and the drug dealer gives you a hit, wow, you're cool, this expensive drug. Oh, he's giving it for me for free. No, you will be hooked forever. So getting Microsoft Office or 365 for free just means you're going to be locked in probably forever. So so the perception is changing. The important things, why do we need an alternative office suite? Do you want to be beholden forever to one company in one part of one country? And it doesn't really matter what country that is. You know, controversies about what's happening in America aside, it could be from Bhutan, you know. But should you be completely tied in to that one company from one country? No, I don't think so. Not in a global world. Do you want to know what's happening with your data? Now, we can never be sure with cloud platforms and data being used to train AI engines and stuff. You don't really know. You can look at license agreements and privacy agreements, but ideally, you just have everything on your own computer. And then things being forced on you as well. So AI, which I guess we'll talk about in a bit, Copilot, you've both mentioned already, just pops up. Helpful, supposedly helpful, telling you what to write, telling you how you should write something. Well, that can be scary in many ways. So, why do we need an alternative office suite? It's always good to have an alternative to most things anyway. You know, freedom, variety, diversity. You don't want a monopoly. I can't think of any good example of a monopoly. So, but looking at the way the world is, and looking at the way tech companies behave, a lot of people want basically to do their work like they've done for decades, but on with an office suite that's not trying to sell them subscriptions. That doesn't mean LibreOffice doesn't need to improve and modernize, but you have people saying, oh, I just want to work like I did in the 1980s with WordPerfect. We can't do that.
No.
But there is definitely a need and a demand for software that just leaves you alone. Maybe that's what we should have called it instead of free software, open source software that leaves you alone.
I like that term. I do. But yeah, and it is very excuse me. So it's very interesting. As someone who, you know, I'm 41. I grew up with, you know, the very offline versions of Microsoft Word with WordPerfect when Corel owned WordPerfect. Even going back, it's interesting you mentioned an Amiga. My first computer was an Amiga 600. I've mentioned it so many times on the show. I have a 500 in a flight case in my closet in my lounge, which I want to work on. And randomly, I know there are word processors for this platform. I've never used one, but I'm going to be trying this. So when I was up visiting my parents recently, I've announced this on socials. So I haven't announced it on the show. Very kind friend. I helped his mum get set up on her new iPhone. Well, he said, oh, you know, you're into retro. I've got something. I've got an old Spectrum. I'm like, ooh. He said, you can have it. I'm like, yeah. So I picked it up. Turns out it wasn't exactly what I was expecting. It wasn't the 48K. Was it even the 128K? Yeah. It was a Spectrum Plus 3.
Oh, with the actual disk drive.
With a 3-inch disk drive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think those disks are really hard to come by. You can find Spectrum cassettes everywhere. I have a load of those also at my parents' place in England. But I also me or my brother somewhere picked up a plus three from some flea market years ago. And but I don't think that sold many. The plus two was everywhere when Amstrad bought Sinclair. And does it work? No, have you tried it?
So it works. I had a nightmare getting it onto a TV because 15 kilohertz SCART RGB is thrown on modern LCDs. So found the one TV in my parents' place. It still had an analog TV tuner. Got it tuned in that way. It does still work. Haven't been able to test a floppy drive, but I am looking at, and it's going to be something we do on stream. This is completely aside, but will be there will be word processors for the Specky. I am going to get the there's a HDMI adapter you can plug into the back of the interface port, and then I'm going to get one of the DIV MMC things to run software off an SD card.
That's so cool. I watch some speedrunners speedrunning N64 games like Mario 64, and in many cases they want to run on CRT displays because the latency is so low. And of course, it gets harder and harder to find a CRT display now. I don't really know what will happen to speedrunning when all the CRTs pop.
Oh gosh, yeah. Absolutely. But looping back to LibreOffice, I am a big fan. And I think one of the experiences I've had is, obviously, it's free. It's, as you say, it's Ubuntu. You install. So I did a clean install of Ubuntu on an old Dell. Okay. I've got to tell something. You know what you were saying about having to like get things working on Linux? Well, I thought I was in that situation with that machine. And I think this is a really, I want to just say, sometimes it's not a Linux problem. It's a PEBCAC. It's a definite problem exists between keyboard and chair. So this machine had previously been set up, but they never got used. It had been set up on Pop OS. So it was a good-minded security person. I thought, it's never going to reconnect. I don't know where it's actually going to. Turns out it was still taken back to my sister's and just left there. So I blocked the MAC address on my parents' Wi-Fi. Well, fast forward, trying to get it up and running again because my dad had forgotten the encryption password to the drive. So I wiped it, got it back up and running after we did a few upgrades to it. Just would not join my Wi-Fi. I'm like, oh, it's got to be a Linux issue. It's got, you know, something wrong. I'll try a different distro. Try, you know, go back to LTS to see if that's the issue. Nah, because I blocked it, obviously it just would not join the network, but it looked like it was a WPA failure on so yeah, just check that you haven't blocked devices, folks. Sometimes it is a lot simpler than you think.
How long did it take you until the light bulb appeared above your head and you were like, right, hang on, it might be that.
At least a day.
I was just thinking, I can imagine you like installing not just Linux, thinking, well, it just doesn't work with Linux for some reason, like React OS or Haiku or something. I need something that works with Risk OS or something, if it's even possible.
Do you know, I didn't quite do an Action Retro. I didn't go Haiku. I should have done Haiku on it or something, but yes, no. That was embarrassing. But the point I was going to make is straight out of the box, there is LibreOffice. So go on.
Jay, did you want to say something?
It might. She's at work, so she might. It might be someone wanting to come in.
Oh, so of course, because she's in America. Yeah. So
she's actually at the store. We're having some stuff fitted today, so we're having some new hardware installed. Digital signage installed at the store today, folks. It's a lot of fun.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Well, yeah. Kudos for being in a podcast and working at the same time. Yeah, LibreOffice is the pretty much standard office suite in Linux distributions as well. And it's a tool that it's kind of just there. It's, for many people, it's not exciting, and that's arguably the way it should be. We have requests from people saying LibreOffice needs to be exciting. LibreOffice needs to be different. LibreOffice needs a radically new user interface. People look at what Apple is doing with Pages and their apps, which are very pretty and very simplified. Yeah, they've arguably simplified the workflow. But we have millions and millions of users who expect things to be in a certain way. And this is a massive challenge for many, many software projects in free and open source software as well. So you have users who say, look, LibreOffice, why do you look like the 1990s? Which is not always true, because when you install LibreOffice, it defaults to the menu and tabbed user interface, but you can switch to a tabbed user interface as well, which looks a bit more like Microsoft. So that's not the default. So people assume LibreOffice can only look like something from the 1990s. But then we tell people, look, click here and you can get a tabbed user interface, which is a bit more modern. But then people say, yeah, but you need to revolutionize the Office suite. Okay, that's an interesting point. Maybe we need to do that. But do we want to leave behind millions and millions of users? And then it's those millions and millions of users who are donating to keep the Document Foundation alive. So the Document Foundation is the small non-profit Stiftung in German foundation that was founded in 2012, just a couple of years after the LibreOffice project started, to oversee the LibreOffice project and community. And it has a big bunch of like rules it applies by, very German, but to basically say it's non-profit, it's independent, it's not there to develop LibreOffice itself, but it's there to support the LibreOffice community so that LibreOffice can survive, so that the infrastructure is there, that there are people there overseeing documentation and QA and stuff like that. So we always say we at the Document Foundation, we are not the developers of LibreOffice, because there are hundreds of people involved in LibreOffice, but we are there at the kernel to coordinate activities to keep the project alive, to maintain the trademarks, so not everybody can run around and say, oh, this is LibreOffice, and a bunch of administrative stuff as well, and a lot of infrastructure, because you have translations, yeah, the whole Bugzilla interface, continuous integration, lots of security stuff. That all comes from our side. So, yeah. But how does this exist? How does the whole foundation exist? To support the community through donations. And 80%, 85% of the income of the Document Foundation is from donations from end users. People who go to the website, download LibreOffice, and when you click download, while it's downloading, you get a page saying you can donate if you like. So that's where the donations are coming from. If we radically change the LibreOffice user interface to be completely new and modern and trend-setting, or however you would define it, what happens then? 10 million users say, 100 million users say, I don't want to use it anymore, I'm going to use OpenOffice. Oh man, hopefully not. But then you lose that revenue stream. So this is why it's really, really difficult for us. You have to change, you have to adapt, but some things just work. And you have a lot of people donating to us who just like the stuff we do and don't want radical changes.
Which makes a lot of sense. And, you know, again, it's a consistent interface. It's very, I've literally got Writer open up now, and it's so clear and consistent. And I'm using, obviously, I'm a dark mode fiend. I'm using the Breeze SVG theme. There's a lot of customizability, and it's really, really nice. Now, when we talk about LibreOffice, though, I just want to clarify one thing. LibreOffice is obviously a package. It's a whole thing, but it comes, obviously, with Writer, which is a word processor. Comes with Calc, which is, by the way, a great name for a spreadsheet. Calc. That just does what it says on the tin, right? Impress, which is your PowerPoint, your presentation tool. Draw. You've got a dedicated math formula tool. And then the thing that obviously you don't even get in the standard version. In fact, you don't even get in the Mac versions of Office is database. So you've got the base database. Because Microsoft Access is Windows only, and is only in the higher-end versions of of Office. So you've got all of this. And I guess the question to ask is, but what about all the documents I work with? What about... And there's two aspects to this, right? There's, oh, well, you know, my teacher or my employer sent me a Word file. Can I open it in... or an Excel file? Can I open it in LibreOffice? So can we clear up a few myths that in terms of compatibility? Because I think that's, before we talk, because I want to loop back to the whole control of your data and the privacy aspect, because that is really fundamental for me. But can we clear up some misconceptions about using LibreOffice? Because I think that's really important to, you know, to address.
It is, yeah. And also the misconception that a document has to be .doc. I saw recently, when I say recently, I mean 2 years ago, you know how time goes, but the Open University, which is a UK thing. I think it's non-profit. I'm not exactly sure about the funding. James, you might know a bit more, but they had files on their website in .doc format, not even .docx, which I'll talk about in a minute, but in .doc, Microsoft's completely proprietary binary format. Open University in the UK, the idea is open for everybody, yeah? And mm-hmm. to educate, to give everybody the opportunity to improve themselves and all really good stuff. And somebody sent us a picture, a screenshot, a link, I can't remember, but saying, look, the Open University of the United Kingdom, which I think has public funding as well, is giving out documents in .doc or asking for documents in .doc. And that then just becomes established as the normal thing. Oh, a document is .doc. And also the extension doesn't help as well. So this is a big problem. You have .doc and .doc files are binary, mishmash, blended messes of bits of data that are very, very hard for other Office suites to read. And some people could say, well, that's what happened 20 years ago. Every piece of software was saving its documents and files in a different format. So every software couldn't work together. Fine. What happened then more recently? Well, you have .docx from Microsoft. So Microsoft created their next format, OOXML, Office Open XML, where they said, look, everything will be documented. Other Office suites can use it. Everything is XML. Like when XML was really big in trend. But there are two types of OOXML. There's the really strict format, which is technically documented, which technically other Office suites can use with some problems. But then there's the transitional format, which is what Microsoft Office saves in normally. So in the transitional format, a .docx file is full of weird bits of kludge and a bit of binary data here, a blob of data there, some weird stuff that says render this paragraph like Word 1995 on Mac OS, whatever. So you have all these .docx files, which are supposedly open XML files, going around the vast majority. And then people say, well, why can't LibreOffice read them? Yeah, well, LibreOffice can read them, but why does this paragraph, why does something look different in LibreOffice than in this, in Microsoft Office or Microsoft 365? Because these files are full of kludges, binary blobs, weird references, and things like that. That makes it very, very difficult. And it's worth noting that you can do comparisons of Microsoft Office files in different versions of Microsoft Office on different platforms, and they look different as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. when people say, why is LibreOffice not 100% compatible with Microsoft Office? There are reasons like one of them I just explained, but Microsoft Office is not 100% compatible depending on the fonts, depending on the operating system, depending on the version. Documents can look slightly different internally to Microsoft. And I guess they don't do that deliberately. So they are fighting their own messed up, complicated file format that even they can't. So what we say to people now is, use what you want. I mean, nice if you use LibreOffice, but what's really good is to use the open document format. Mm. That's the standard format of LibreOffice, but it's not the LibreOffice format. It's a separate independent file format, managed by OASIS, a different standards body. And, plenty of, organizations have standardized on it already. The UK government, and I'll send a link, standardized 5 years ago or more on ODT. It doesn't mean they all use Microsoft and they have other problems, but they say internally we should use ODT so that or if they put a document on the UK government website, it will be in ODT so everybody can access it, including Microsoft Office users, because Microsoft Office supports ODT. So Microsoft formats are very, very difficult and messy, which is why LibreOffice does, I think, a pretty good job supporting them. Maybe could do better. And if anybody has a problem with a Microsoft Office document, they can submit it to our bug tracker, and then we can look at it and try to improve. But it's a bit of a it's a battle that you're constantly running behind. What would be better is if everybody uses the same fully open standardized format, and then let's compete on features. Yeah, if we're all using ODT and people want to use Microsoft, then well, that's up to them. But at least if we all get behind a standardized format, then at least we're sharing the same data, and then we use the software we want based on features, not on these quirks of compatibility.
That was one of the reasons why, for instance, when I was in college, I used Word because I was afraid of using anything, because James a few times said, hey, you should use LibreOffice. And I was like, I was afraid of sending something that would possibly not be read by a professor in that, because I've had professors be very particular with what they want. And it would be nice if the universities would move to open document format, because that way students could write on whatever device that they need to use.
Yeah. Yeah. It is that fear as well. Or I think that's a particularly good example that Jay mentioned, because also people who are submitting documents when they want to get books published. So, you know, you're a new writer, you're desperately trying to get your first book published, and your publisher says, please send a docx file. Well, okay. Do you want to send it written in LibreOffice, or do you want to send it written in Microsoft Office? If you have a bit of fear that the document might not be accepted or might look a bit weird, you might think, well, I better use Microsoft Office just because it will have the perfect DocX compatibility, even though you may rather use LibreOffice. But that fear that, oh, well, and this is what brings people back. And this is... this is how the system works, and it's quite scary, actually. But that's how you get vendor locking. So yeah. Jay's example, or the example from publishers as well. Well, we all use DocX, so please use the real DocX software, whatever that means. But nobody wants to be the outsider saying, no, I'm doing it my way, when you risk not getting your university degree or getting a job or your book published or whatever.
And it's really interesting for me as well, is, you know, for a number of times, like, for, you know, applying for a job and the application form is a Microsoft Word file. So, okay, fine. It opens, but oh gosh, all the formatting's gone. And that's not, by the way, that is not just as Mike mentioned, that's not just a LibreOffice or even Apple Pages problem. I've seen it on Word for Mac. You know, Word on the Mac. I've seen it if you're trying to use a web version. And it is frustrating, to say the least. But the other thing about why I think Microsoft have such a lock-in is because now, and especially, and I think this translates into kind of the control of your data, because what do we now all associate? When we say Microsoft Office, what version do we, and I'm going to put this out to both of you, what version do we automatically assume when we talk about Microsoft Office now?
Mike? I don't even know what, if they have a version, because everything is rolling subscription.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. If I said, Jay, what about yourself?
I was thinking the same thing, because I used to have a personal 365, and like I have one that I use for work, but... for a long time, I didn't have Microsoft Word. It was only provided either by myself or by my school.
So whereas we used to say, for example, Word 2003 or Word 97, now we just say Microsoft Word, because as Mike and Jay both said, it's now all rolled up. It is much harder now to buy a standalone license for Microsoft Word, or indeed Office. In fact, I don't even think you can buy just Word by itself anymore.
I think there is some very specific channels you can go down, and I think you have to be a company or something where you can get a standalone version of. Yeah, because one thing Microsoft does pretty well, I would say. And this is also because they have a lot of vendor lock-in, is they do support companies who are using really ancient versions of things. So they are really trying to push everybody onto the subscription model, Microsoft 365, no version numbers, you are here forever, that kind of thing. So I'm not praising them for that, but they do have a lot of business customers, and they do. So you have big businesses saying, look, we still want to pay for Microsoft Office licenses. We still want to have the software delivered on a DVD or a USB key. I'm not joking. People ask this to us. Can you send us a DVD? Can you send us a USB key? And Microsoft, I think, is savvy enough to still support those big customers, governments, giant enterprises, who are not publicly saying anything about it, but they go to Microsoft and say, look, we're not interested in this 365 subscription plan. Send us, or via a secure download link, an Office 2025 that we can click, an MSI file, we can put it on our computers. So fixed versions of Microsoft Office, I think, still exist.
But they do. Yeah.
They're not available to your average user like us.
No. And that means then it goes back to that whole story at the start, is if your license to use software is tied to a subscription, what happens when you get locked out of that subscription because you've forgotten your password, or you've stopped paying for that subscription?
Or you have too many devices on that one subscription.
Yeah. And to me, I should never... Okay. Let's be honest, okay? Where 365, I'm not a huge fan of 365, but where it does well is that integration of your email. Yeah, okay, Microsoft Outlook is a horrible piece of garbage, and the Exchange protocol sucks and doesn't play nice with much stuff. But if you are a business and you know, everyone knows how to use I think almost everyone knows at some point how to use Microsoft Outlook. If I put some of my colleagues at work, and certainly some of my IT support customers, in front of Thunderbird, which it is a great mail client, they would struggle. But then Microsoft have a whole lock-in with OneDrive, with Teams, and now with Copilot. Well, that gets very confusing because you actually have to pay more for all the Copilot features that are baked into the apps. It's not like on by default. You have to pay extra for those if you're in a business. It's very ridiculous how it's all set up. But there is an integration piece. But to me, and I think this is where I want to be clear, LibreOffice, as far as I'm aware, Mike, there's no cloud integration. There's no AI. There's no services baked in.
That's right, yeah. I think that's... Some things we can say are openly are it's a bit lacking for what enterprises want. So yeah, LibreOffice does not include an email client, and the reason for that is resources. We're a community run open source project. We have an ecosystem of commercial developers around, but you know, they do what they can, focusing on their customers, improving the software for their customers. But creating an inbuilt email client from scratch would be a lot of work. We could arguably try to roll in another free and open source email client into LibreOffice, because it is a missing component, definitely. That's what a lot of people expect, and it makes sense in an office environment. So I think we can openly say that's something where LibreOffice could be better. But yeah, time, resources, money, and yeah. So Thunderbird is a very well-known free and open source email client as well. I use it every day. I think it's really good. It has its quirks as well. But it's a completely separate app. Making it fully seamless with LibreOffice is not easy as well. So I think it's fair enough to say this is what Microsoft may offer out of the box that looks better. But you have then people integrating these things together, like in Nextcloud, for instance. Nextcloud, I think, does a really good job of mixing these components together, offering something like Microsoft does. So, and again, when I'm talking about the nice usability things that Microsoft Office may have, the most important thing for me is the freedom to use the software the way you want. So I would rather This is what we talk about. It's more important to have that freedom and control than the nicety of having an email client directly built into your Office suite. So that's a nicety of Microsoft Office, but we think other things matter more, your control over your data and stuff. But yeah, we live in this world. We are in this world where cloud sharing possibilities. This is something else. Again, the Nextcloud, I think, does pretty well. It's not something you can easily just click and buy in the same way like Microsoft, or at least it's a bit more complicated. But it does exist. It is out there. And then AI integration is a big topic. A lot of people who recommend LibreOffice today, including like tech influencers and stuff, they recommend LibreOffice because it doesn't include AI. So they have all been forced onto Copilot, and it's so in your face that, like the old Microsoft paperclip, yeah, you start typing something and Copilot says, "Do you want to do this? Do you mean that?" You know, which is leave me alone to just write something. People try to write books and write all historical texts as well. And they say, "Oh, you can't talk about that." It's like, I'm just writing a historical text. Like, leave me alone to just do my work. So, yeah, there is a demand for AI. There are some use cases for AI, but we in the LibreOffice project said we have no plans to roll that into the software. Anything we do will be an optional user extension, and they do exist. You can get extensions for LibreOffice that use local LLMs, like I think Ollama, things like Stable Diffusion. You can get them, but we don't want to put those into the software itself because we still want to be the 100% privacy-focused Office suite.
And I think that's really important. And the fact that you've got extensions, and I'm just looking at some of the extensions now, you've got, here we go, Local Writer. A LibreOffice Lighter extension that adds local inference generative AI features. You then get to control that, right?
You do, yeah. The problem is, and this is typical of a lot of stuff in the Linux and open source world, is that you have to put it together yourself. Mm-hmm. It's really, really cool when it works, when you get everything together, and then you know you're not sharing all your data with these tech giants, and they're not trying to twist your words or everything is local. But yeah, it requires installing bits of this, bits of that, which the vast majority of people don't want to do. So the kind of holy grail to this would be not providing AI out of the box, I think, giving users the option to do it for local stuff, everything local, and then making it like a couple of clicks away. And that's a big challenge, but it's something we're looking at, something we hope to achieve.
Which is really cool. And you mentioned Nextcloud, because we, as you probably, I guess probably noticed when we sent you a show notes.
Yeah, exactly.
That is Nextcloud.
Yeah.
That is Nextcloud. And in fact, what's really cool about that, you mentioned it's not as easy to get it, to buy it. Well, we used to run our own Nextcloud server and still do. We're actually in the process of migrating. But Hetzner have recently started offering, they call them the storage shares, I think. Yeah, storage shares. And it's basically Nextcloud, run by them, managed and maintained by them, but with all the features. The only slight challenge you have is that they can't run the, Calabro. They can't run that server, so you'd have to run your own server for that. And that obviously is, I believe that's based on partly on that is basically LibreOffice, isn't it?
It is. It's LibreOffice Online from one of the big ecosystem companies that does a lot of development for LibreOffice and then sells support and other services around LibreOffice, like online and stuff. So they've done a lot of good work over the years, improving LibreOffice, doing the online stuff. A good example of how an ecosystem, commercial ecosystem can survive around free and open source software. Hetzner doesn't make that available.
No. So you can run it yourself. I think there are some providers that will give you a code. but code server. You know, with collaborators, I think it's development environments and stuff like that. I can't remember off the top of my head. But that's a terabyte of storage we give you for about €5-6 a month.
Right, that's actually pretty good then. So yeah, these smaller players are starting to provide these alternatives then, because I didn't know about that one. So yeah, I guess you can get these equivalents when people say, oh, you have to install everything manually, like I just said. It's good to see some players actually making that available. Then you still have the similar problems with compatibility, and so people saying I can't share my files. But I think you see in the EU a big push towards digital sovereignty. A state in northern Germany has said we're moving to LibreOffice, and Germany's 80 million people, so that one state alone, I don't know the population off the top of my head, but it's like many millions of people, several million people. Denmark, they're talking about moving to LibreOffice as well, because some things become really important beyond just, oh, well, you have an email client built in, or, you know, this nice co-pilot thing to chat with and help you or annoy you, whatever. But actually digital sovereignty, and without diving into the politics of it all, but I think people are seeing when you become dependent on a company from another country, so in this case, obviously it's Microsoft in the US, but it could be hypothetically any country. That any country can change at any point. Yeah, so you could be dependent on software from Japan, and then something crazy happens in Japan. So, I think people are starting to see that. People are starting to see are we willing to take some trade offs? Are we willing to use software that may not have an email client built in, but we control it in the sense of we know what it's doing. We can look at it, we can inspect it. And I think that's becoming more important, because Office Suites are becoming a commodity anyway. When we go back, what we said earlier in the podcast about going to the shop, buying a CD or a DVD or having Word 2003 or whatever, those days are long gone. Yeah, people just expect there'll be some kind of Office software for them somewhere. So the discussion is moving from, oh, how do I get Office software for free? To like, what actually is happening? Where is my data? Who is looking at it? What is the future of my data? Where is it being stored?
And certainly when you look at services, you know, again, Google being a very popular tool for businesses where everything is basically online, Google Sheets, Google Docs. Well, what's happening with your book that you're writing in Google Docs? How do you know that Google aren't doing something with that?
Yeah, feeding it to Gemini.
Exactly.
And I have to laugh. I was looking in the extensions library for LibreOffice. It's an Office 2003 blue theme. So if you have somebody who doesn't want to switch off of Office, just install the Office theme and they're all good.
Oh, gosh, I remember that theme. I remember that theme very vividly. But it might well be that actually that's a benefit. You joke, Jay, right? But Mike used the example of an 80-year-old woman in Germany. Well, I've got a wonderful client who is also 80, who is coming back into learning IT. Now, he, because of the nature of the work he does, he's very much in the 365 world. But it is confusing. Word is bloated, you know, having to do all the different document templates and trying to explain sharing and things like that. But I think the best thing for me is that if you use the open document format, so OD, I think, is it ODT for text, ODS, am I right?
ODS for spreadsheets, yeah. ODB for presentations, ODB for databases,
Yeah. And you use those, well, it then becomes agnostic to what syncing technology you use. You could be using, you know, Nextcloud. It doesn't have to be on the public internet. You can just do it on your own network. You could use SyncThing. You could use iCloud. Dropbox. Don't use Dropbox, folks. Please don't use Dropbox.
The idea is sound, yeah. Standardize on a real open standardized format, and then use the tool that you want. So you may want to use a very simple editing tool, or you may want to use, because we know that people use word processors basically as graphic design packages.
Gosh, yeah.
You must have both seen this so much. And I saw it recently. I went, I was visiting a school here in Munich, and they were using LibreOffice. I was excited. And they showed me some documents they were making. And in order to center text on a page, they were literally tapping the space bar to push text around. Like, you know, this is... You said, James, I know you worked in like tech support stuff, so you've probably seen this a million times. But for me, like, I'm a total geek, but I try to also be in touch with how people use software. But, you know, at least there's a button on the toolbar to center text. I've seen people that space, space, tap, 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 tap. You have this whole class of users who basically use a word processor as a layout tool. And then that's a nightmare when they send a document to somebody else, even in open document format, which is very nice. But when you're pressing space to move stuff around, it's going to mess things up anyway.
Especially if you go for a font that they do not have. Because remember, folks, you can choose a font, your fancy, you know, super duper clown font. But if a person you're sending a file to does not have that font, guess what happens to all your formatting?
Yeah,
you know, please use open standard fonts. Use good fonts. So we have a contractor at work, and I won't name them, but I've had my run-ins with them because I don't like the quality of their work. Right, so that's one reason I don't like them. But I am instantly put off of them because all the emails they send. Bear in mind, this is a professional contractor in quite a big business. Are in Comic Sans.
Oh no.
Just like, no. It's like, I don't want to get a quote in Comic Sans. Like, I'm really glad we have to repackage quotes, you know, because I'm not sending that to a customer. But it is, you know, I remember it's the whole thing. I mean, I know PDF. Actually, here's a really good question, right? And I had actually thought about asking this, but I want to ask this. So, you've done your document, you've done your CV, right? And you want to send it to an employer, but you don't want them to be able to edit it. The go-to has always been PDF. Is there, and I hadn't even, is there, because PDF is not an open standard. It's Adobe's thing, right?
Yes and yes. I think it's pretty much standardized. I would have to actually check about this. Free and open source software products can. It's standardized as ISO 32000. So I'm not sure if Adobe's put a bunch of hooks around things. I don't want to say because, I think it's reasonably standardized. Yeah, the ISO published version 2.0 PDF, which was 2017. I think it's okay. There may be some controversies about other stuff that we've done. I'm not sure, so I can't say anything. But I think PDF is okay.
I guess I've learned something about. I didn't realize that there was an actual ISO standard around PDF. That for me actually answers that question because one thing I will always say: if you're sending a file to someone and you don't need them to edit it and it's a final version, send a PDF.
Yep. Just to say, just because an ISO standard is there, it doesn't necessarily mean everything is hunky-dory because, and again, I'm not saying anything about Adobe here. So just to be clear, maybe Adobe does everything right here. So I don't know exactly. But Microsoft, going back to what we said earlier in the podcast, Microsoft Office formats, the OOXML, .docx, are technically ISO standards. The strict format, but again, Microsoft saves all its documents in the transitional formats to say, oh, we're just transitioning to this new OOXML, which has been around for like 18 years. It's technically a standardized, technically an ISO format, but Microsoft is not always using it themselves, then what does that mean at the end of the day? So,
That's a very valid point. But I think that's a little bit reassuring on PDF. I don't think there is a, unfortunately, there's not really a better way that I can think of.
No, but the best way would probably be people sharing open document files with embedded fonts. where you can embed the funds.
True.
They are freely distributable. And yeah, I think that would be a pretty good. You would still face some challenges with different systems and rendering engines and things, but I think you would get pretty close to.
That's a good point. I'm thinking more of a sort of read-only aspect of it, but I guess you could password protect the file to for editing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, PDFs, you can open PDFs in LibreOffice Draw as well. So even a PDF is not technically read-only.
Valid.
LibreOffice Draw opens PDFs. It's often very hard to parse a PDF where the text boxes are, what text box belongs to another one, because, as you said, they are designed for print. But
it's interesting. Mike, I think obviously a lot of really good stuff. I mean, LibreOffice, it's been kept up to date, security patches. But one thing, as you said, that OpenOffice does not have anymore is security patches. And folks, just remember, you might think, oh, why do I care if my word processor is getting security patches? Do you not remember all the word viruses back in the 90s and 2000s? It's very easy. No software is perfect, right? And vulnerabilities can get in there. So keep it updated. I am really going to quickly check something. There was something that's just popped up for me, which is related. I just want to have a quick look at something.
You do that, James. I would say, one of the biggest like vectors of viruses is Microsoft Office macro files. So you get these files. We get them at the Document Foundation, funnily enough, somebody emailing us some spam with an attachment, XLSM or something. And it's a macro file for Microsoft Excel and doing who knows what. And but it's exactly like you say. People say, my computers are maintained and stuff. I don't need to update my Office suite all the time or using OpenOffice from 10 years ago. No, if you're receiving any files, you really, really need to make sure you're up to date, because a file, a document can trigger things. It's not just plain text. It's got macros.
Oh, yeah.
There's all sorts of stuff going on, or triggers something in the rendering engine with the fonts. There are a million, million things. So I understand people say, look, I use this offline. I don't use my internet connection often and stuff. Understandably, a lot of people don't want constant updates. The people get update fatigue, and I understand that.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really. But if you've got a big piece of software on your computer, like an Office suite, that's very, very complicated and doing many things, it is worth keeping it up to date. And then I hope, we don't radically change the user interface every 3 years, introduce a new glass. What is Apple doing with iOS, liquid glass? I've only seen pictures of that, but it reminds me of Windows Vista or something.
Everyone's saying that, but it reminds me of Aero. It's really funny you mentioned, Mike, because the last episode we put out was with Gideon Mayhew from the Icon Factory, and we did talk a little bit about, the challenges of that new UI concept. It's not working out that well at the moment. I really hope Apple can turn it around. So the thing I just went to check on is something really cool. We use Ninja One for our tech business, for our customers. We use Ninja One as our remote management and monitoring tool. Well, guess which Office suite is available as a software install via their remote management tool?
Abbey Word. No, really, they have LibreOffice. But why would explain to me, please? Why would what context does that make sense?
What, to have LibreOffice in there?
Yeah, so, in this remote management tool. Or maybe I'm missing something.
Not necessarily. No, it's a really good question. So, you are a business. You are, let's say you're this Danish government, and you have now said, okay, I need to get LibreOffice onto all my government machines. Well, you say in a policy on your RMM tool and your management tool, okay, LibreOffice now is a mandatory install. Ninja One's installed.
Right, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes and installs, and it will then update as well.
Now I get you. Yeah, now I get the context. Yeah. Ah, that's really, really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. They have that. Abby words, that made me smile. Oh, there is one question I want to ask, because obviously with LibreOffice being FOSS, very difficult to get, typically very difficult to get FOSS software onto iOS.
Yeah, we have the LibreOffice viewer the LibreOffice an app for Impress to control presentations on there. But yeah, iOS is a particularly difficult platform in some respects. And it's not something we focus on anyway. We have such limited resources that we focus on the desktop application. We do have a viewer app for Android, which is available on F-Droid, and the Google Play Store, which is primarily for viewing documents, but has experimental editing support as well. But yeah, iOS, we do get questions from people asking when we're going to support iOS, when LibreOffice is going to be available on iPhones and iPads, but yeah, given the limited resources we have, we really focus on the desktop app.
Which makes a lot of sense. And because, obviously, you are using this open document standard, the ODO, is it the ODF is the correct term, isn't it? The ODF is the whole concept.
Yeah, exactly. ODF is the umbrella, open document format. And then, you have underneath the ODT and ODS,
But that means someone can just come along, someone who wants to make an iPad app could just say, okay, my thing's going to work with ODF, and there you go, that's it.
And they should do it, and that would be brilliant. Yeah, one of the things, one of the questions people ask us a lot is like, is it okay if I use another Office app, or what's it, use what you want, but use, like I said before, use the open document format at least, and then we're all compatible, and then we can build from that. So then if you want to move later to LibreOffice, that's fine. But I think if we all have a common starting point, I want healthy competition. Yeah. If Microsoft Office does something good, sure. I mean, there are plenty of reasons to avoid tech giants and monopolists, like we said before. But I would like healthy competition between apps where we're saying, oh, you have more features, do this. But locking people into documents, everybody's sending around .doc files and pretending that's like a standard, that's kind of painful. Because that's what really limits people's ability to choose the software that they want.
Yeah. Also, I'm going to call Microsoft out on something. I've just gone into Word, because obviously I have Word on this Mac for Beat Store. You can, in Microsoft Word, say, I want you to save all my files as OD, open document text.
Yep.
Great. However, when you go to save the file for the first time, this is what they put up. The default file format for new documents is currently open document text. Saving in this format might cause macros, password protections, and formatting to be lost. To preserve these Word document features, save in a Word document folder. To change it, it tells you how to... Yeah.
Fear, uncertainty, and doubt all over again. Yeah. So.
And there you go. Because surely, what have you got to fear, Microsoft? Some people prefer... Obviously, we're big fans of LibreOffice. But some people, again, if you are someone who... for whatever reason, or your business dictates that you have to use it, just because you're using Microsoft Word doesn't mean you have to use the .docx format, as we've talked about. It would be like me saying to Jay, oh, I am going to design all of our stuff for everything we do in bitmap files, and you have to use bitmap files.
BMP files, imagine that.
BMP. BMP, what was the Windows one? Windows...
PCX.
Oh, PCX.
Well, I don't even know. PCX was DOS or something.
It's WMP, wasn't it?
Yes.
WMP files. And now, of course, depending what I'm doing, I'm saving as SVGs or pings or, whatever I need to. But there is a big, for me, there is the biggest, most important thing that I want to see. And I don't think the big tech giants get or actually care is let me take my data to any other app that I want to.
Yeah, it's not they don't care. They don't want you to do it, because that is the freedom then. That will give you the freedom to just switch between apps, transparently on a whim. That's, they don't want that to happen. They want you to be unsure. They might think, yeah, well, I might be missing this. James, when you install these word processors on the Amiga or on the Spectrum or whatever, I'm curious to see what formats they will save in.
I am good. Do you know what? I will follow up. There you go. That's a challenge. Okay, folks. The first retro programmer to bring me an ODF-compatible Amiga or Speccy word processor. Do you know what? I actually bet that... Look, the retro community is an amazing place, right? Yeah, I mean, yeah. You know, I would not be at all surprised. And because just to be very clear, at the heart of the whole idea of ODF and everything is it is open XML. It is an XML document, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's worth noting as well, just last geeky thing. Also, I'm now bursting for the bathroom, so this will have to be my last.
I think that's a good excuse. That's a good way to wrap up, absolutely.
I think so, yeah. But interestingly, in open document format, there's something called flat open document format. So ODF, normal ODF, is basically a zip file with a bunch of files inside. So metadata, the content in XML, the images and stuff like that. But you can save in LibreOffice as a flat ODF file, and it's basically everything is in one giant file, which you can then process using any kind of like sed or grec and grop all these different command line tools. You can then process it, and which is useful for some people. If you're doing some scripting and you want to do a bunch of changes on a load of files and you don't want to extract them and poke around inside, take this flat file, run it through some a bunch of command line with a bunch of pipes to change something. So, yeah, my tip from this podcast will be flat ODT or flat ODF. Yeah,
there you go. Awesome. Well, Mike, given that you are bursting for relief, we will wrap this up. Do you want to quickly tell people though why, if you can hold it in long enough? Do you want to tell people where they can find out more about LibreOffice, where they can support your work, and any other quick shout-outs you'd like to give?
Yes, thanks for the opportunity, because LibreOffice has millions of users, but LibreOffice only exists because people contribute to it, and that's super, super important. Most people in the open source field know this as well, but... look at Apache OpenOffice, still has millions of users, but zero development. Nobody's interested in developing it. It just exists, and they really should wrap it up and just stop distributing it. So LibreOffice exists, has 100 million, 200 million users, we estimate, but it only will keep going if people contribute. So, and you don't have to be a programmer to contribute to LibreOffice. That's super important. People think, oh, I need to be C++ guru. No, we need translations. We need people working on documentation. We need people working on marketing. That's kind of my role. That's where my background in LibreOffice, but I'm just one guy. Microsoft has 3,000 people in its marketing department alone. I think just for the States or just for one country. So we need people in marketing.
They did yesterday. We've just slashed it by another 1,500 today.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Joking, of course, but yeah.
But no, but it's true. It's it is the David versus Goliath situation. Microsoft's thousands of people working in marketing and ridiculous budget. The marketing for LibreOffice is me and another guy, Italo, in Italy, and a very good community worldwide as well. But it's real fight to do this. So, yeah, anybody who's listening to this podcast, you can help. You don't need to be a programmer. That is good, but please help us in documentation. Help us with QA, just testing new versions. Help us with marketing. Wherever you are, we don't have a big LibreOffice community in the UK, for instance, or even in the States, actually. We have bigger communities in Italy and Japan. So we want to build communities across the world, spread the word. Because when you have communities in places, they can talk to local governments, talk to local politicians, talk to schools, ask them, why are you spending all this taxpayers' money on software from Microsoft? Yeah, this is happening now in Germany and in Europe slowly. Yeah, why? spend, taxpayers spend their money. Why are we spending to buy one piece of software from one company in one country? Why not spend it locally on local developers? So, yeah, so that's why, yeah, we local people come and support us. And then, yeah, libreoffice.org, people can find the links there as well. The marketing project, drop me a line, mike.saunders@documentfoundation.org. I guess we can add to the notes as well. And yeah, then absolutely. I look forward to hearing from people.
Brilliant. Mike, thank you so much for your time. Folks, do go and check out LibreOffice, especially, look, if you are someone who maybe doesn't have, genuinely doesn't have a budget for Office, go and check it out because it is brilliant. And we will be doing more and more series and more episodes on alternatives to big tech. It's a big thing that Jay and I believe in. We eat our own dog food. You know, we are Nextcloud users. We are LibreOffice users. Yes, we're also 365 users for one of the businesses we were involved in. But that also lets us see, it gives us a view as to where the challenges are. But yeah, check out LibreOffice. Jay, any, very quick final thoughts because we need to let Mike go to the toilet.
No, I'm just very impressed at everything that goes into it. And it really does make, I want everybody who's listening to think about what tools are you using and where could you possibly get a better tool that's open source and free?
Absolutely. All right. Well, on that note, we wish you a very fussy day. Go and liberate your office. Oh, did I a fussy day? Is that a thing? Oh, jeez.
It is now. It is now.
It is now. There we go.
I mean, as the dentist says, always remember to fuss.
Always remember to fuss. Oh, jeez. On that bombshell, I'm going to roll the outro. Thank you very much.
Thanks, James. Thanks, Jay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Crosswires. We hope you've enjoyed our discussion and we'd love to hear your thoughts. So please drop us a note over to podcast@crosswires.net. Why not come and join our Discord community over at crosswires.net/Discord. We've got lots of text channels, we've even got voice channels, and we've got forum posts for every episode that we put out there. If you are Mastodon, you can also follow us either by heading over to wires.social or just follow crossed@wires.social.
If you'd like to check out more of our content, head on over to crossedwires.net/YouTube for all our videos, and keep an eye on our Twitch channel at crossedwires.net/live for our upcoming streams.
If you like what you heard, please do drop a review in your podcast directory of choice. It really does help spread the word about the show.
And of course, if you can spare even the smallest amount of financial support, we'd be incredibly grateful. And you can support us at ko-fi.com/crossedwires, that is ko-fi.com/crossedwires.
Until next time, thanks for listening.